right, decisions. We all got a ton of decisions to make these days, and you got to make them right. And for that to happen, you got to know what you're talking about, what's going on, understanding it, and understanding how you're going to change things. And this is extremely important. This is what this show is all about, okay, in a lot of ways. So, just so we can fill people in, at the back end of the show, we're going to be listening to the actor and the director of a new play on Anne Frank. It's really fitting these days, and it's really fitting given what we're talking about today, but what's going on in the world, and it's a really remarkable play, actually. It's very interesting. Before that, we'll be hearing from Carl Dix, who will be talking to us from Washington, D.C., where a flag was burnt by Joey Johnson. That brother, he is really good at burning flags, among other things. I'm sure it made the hearts of many millions of people soar when they saw that all over the world. And we'll be talking with one of those folks about what's going on. Joey was arrested, and we'll be talking with them about that. But opening the show up, see, I'm so used to plays, I was about to say, opening the play up is, okay, and the person who actually really did once open a play up, Annie Day! Hi, Annie.
Hi, Michael.
And Annie's joining us along with, she's joining us along with Alex.
Hello, Michael.
Hi, and Chantel.
Hi, Michael.
Hi. All right, now that we've gotten all acquainted, I want to get serious around this. I think it's really important that you guys are here today. What's going on. And actually, we're going to talk with Carl or Noche about what happened in D.C. yesterday, but you folks were involved in a similar act in San Diego, was it, or along the border?
Yeah, just to start, so they were really glad to be here. Chantel and Alex are both with the Revolution Club in Los Angeles and Refuse Fascism, and I'm here with the Bob Avakian Institute and also on a national tour to organize for an actual revolution. And we were responding to a call that was put out by the National Revolution Tour to mark the July 4th, while the fascist jackal in the White House was filling D.C. with tanks, and while concentration camps are at the southern border, we were responding to a call to imagine a world without America that was put out by RevCom.us and to light the American flag on fire, which we were honored to do at the U.S.-Mexico border, and maybe they can talk a little bit more about why they were part of it.
Okay. You.
I was part of the flag burning down at the border because it's just wrong that there's concentration camps, and there's still people not outraged enough about these concentration camps and celebrating the 4th of July in just normal ways, like everything's fine, normalizing what's going on. I was down there to stand with them in solidarity and show people around the world that there's people here in America that know it's wrong and are fighting against it and are trying to create a better world.
I was a part of it because, you know, I was answering the call, imagine a world without America. You know, that American imperialist rag, what it represents, you know, it's dripping with the blood of the people of the world, you know, the wars of empire, you know, throughout the history of this country, the slavery and the genocide and what they're doing to immigrant people right now, you know, at the border, they're locking children in cages. And that American flag is flying high in those concentration camps. You know, it's stitched in the uniforms of the police that murder black and brown people, and they get away with it, you know. So that's why we're putting this call out in the world. You know, we're putting this message that there is a force, you know, out there that's fighting for a world without America.
You know, it's interesting. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, just real quick. And if people want to, I mean, we're here to mainly talk about these legal cases we're in the middle of, but it's very relevant in terms of actually a declaration of a force that's serious about taking this system down at the soonest possible time. And if people want to know more about that and want to, were inspired by imagining a world without America or inspired by the pictures that they've seen of the flag burning in front of that White House built by slaves, then people can tune in on Sunday at 1 p.m. West Coast time. There's going to be a Facebook Live that's going to talk more about the revolution, and people can find out more. So it's 1 p.m. our time, L.A. time, 4 p.m. Eastern time, facebook.com/tuneintorevcom. And it's on all of us right now to imagine a world without America. One of the things we said was to Donald Trump, after we make a revolution, we're going to tear down that wall. And at that point, have the ability in the new socialist republic of North America to welcome people from all over the world who want to contribute to building a new society.
Yeah, it's extremely important. And actually, I want you to repeat the information when we end this segment so people can actually write it down and figure out where they're going to be and how they're going to be there, how they're definitely going to be there, not figure out how, you know, why they'll be there. But you got to be there. Let's talk about a couple of things with you guys, because I watched you a couple of days. You've been on trial.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. which it's kind of interesting because you're on trial and yet you go out and you take the stand, and there's something that was linked between you being out there yesterday and this trial, you know, the trial that you're going on. It's not the same case, but it's actually something that I think is really important in terms of what people think about, you know, when Trump first came into office and the whole way that this developed, where, you know, just this rolling, you know, fascist pig comes in and just, you know, this is what's going on, and he, and basically is in the process of changing, you know, the entire way that things are carried out here, you know, and really bringing to the fore what, you know, the U.S. has never been a source of progress in terms of the feelings, you know, what happens to the people here or around the world. But it's also, you know, at this point, the leap into fascism, which is occurring very quickly. You folks kind of were part of a movement that jumped out right away. And I remember this very clearly because, Annie, I was on my way over to do this show, and all of a sudden the cars stopped on the freeway. I said, oh, no. And that day I ended up doing half of my show from the car. Right? But it was enticing. You know, it was just inspiring. It was needed. It was something that really captured, I think, the imagination and understanding of a lot of people. A lot of people asking, what the hell are they doing that for? What happened, though, was that you've been put up, you know, all of you, nine people have been put up on charges, and they're fairly serious charges. Which one of you wants to start and talk about what has happened?
I'll start. I mean, you know, we got on the freeway, the 101 freeway in downtown, you know, to sound the alarm of fascism, you know, what was to come. And that was in 2017, you know, where at that time, you know, as soon as Trump took office, he put that Muslim ban into effect, you know, where they started handcuffing little children from the Middle East, you know, in their arms. Their wrists were so tiny that they were cuffing them from their arms, you know. This is what they were doing then, you know. And then they allowed the pipeline to, you know, he gave a green light to finish that pipeline, you know, in Standing Rock, you know, and everything that he was doing. So, you know, we answered the call from Refuse Fascism, you know, that on November 4th it begins, you know, a sustained mobilization, nonviolent, you know, where people take to the streets and are millions, you know, to demand that the Trump-Pence regime must go. And we got on that 101 freeway. You know, it wasn't an easy decision to make, you know. Like, I remember in during the trial, the prosecution, he said, if that was the message that you guys wanted to put, like, why couldn't you just do something like the Women's March, you know? We answered, well, as the Women's March was a very beautiful and inspiring day, you know. I was in D.C. in 2017, you know. We were out there, and it was thousands and thousands of people, you know. And throughout the world, there was millions of people that came out, you know. But it wasn't enough, you know, because people went home. And If people would have stayed in the streets and demanded that Trump-Pence regime must go, like, we would be in a whole different situation, you know. But going getting back to the cases, you know, this is what they're doing to shut down dissent, you know. Like, what the prosecution did in that courtroom, you know, they were the mouthpiece for the fascist Trump-Pence regime, because they're out to criminalize dissent. You know, they're going after people, putting bogus charges on them, you know, conspiracy charges on somebody that wasn't even on the freeway. And they charged her with being on the freeway with obstruction, you know. And as soon as we found out also that the LAPD sent in a confidential informant to Refuse Fascism meetings, they recorded conversations, including a conversation with me. You know, and when we got these charges, we got a police report where we found all of this out, right? But then, you know, we seeked out the identity of this informant, and the prosecution And the judge ruled in favor, you know, so the prosecution dropped the charges, you know, because they're trying to hide something. You know, and even during our trial, they suppressed this information from the jury. You know, they said that this CI information was irrelevant and that we were not allowed to talk about it, you know, and what is it that they're trying to hide? You know, like and then you know what's happening in Arizona with Scott Warren. You know, it's not a separate thing. You know, they're going after this guy for being out in the desert, helping out immigrants who are seeking a better life, who are forced, who are driven out of their countries because of U.S. imperialism. You know, and they're charging him with these bogus charges as well. You know, and now they're gonna retrial his case as well because it was a hung jury too, like ours, right? But this is what these people are trying to do.
Chantel.
Yeah, this case is important. They're not backing down. The prosecution isn't backing down, and we're not either. What we did was right. And I got on the freeway for humanity, you know, standing with the 7 billion people of the world. I understood that even back in 2017, the danger this Trump-Pence regime faces to the entire world. And I was responding to the call from Refuse Fascism, and I stepped into the freeway to show other people what is actually needed. People are, you know, going on with their lives, watching TV, drinking their coffee, going to work, and we're stripping away women's rights right in front of them, LGBTQ rights, and sticking these children in cages and saying they don't need soap or a good night's rest. It's just, it drives me insane. And other people feel the same way, and I know it, but no one's yet willing to face what's actually needed. And it needs to be us and our millions in the streets declaring that this Trump-Pence regime must go.
You know, did you want to say something?
Let me just help to pull back in terms of where we're at in this case. So there's the Freeway 9 and the UCLA 5, and they're related cases. And they're related because the LA city attorney brought the charges against these people all at the same time. And you know, one of the things that reveals this is actually a political persecution. So there was the first trial that took place of Alex and Chantel, and it was actually a great victory because it ended in a mistrial. Meaning that there were several jurors who said, no, I recognize that opposing fascism is not a crime. And that ended in a hung jury last Friday. And the prosecution doubled down and they said, no, we're going for a second trial. So that second trial starts toward the end of July, on July 22nd. There's a defense committee forming for the Freeway 9 and the UCLA 5. And there's a way, if you're hearing our voices and you know this regime has to be stopped and you're inspired by people putting themselves on the line to stop it, you are needed because we have to have their backs and make spread the word of this throughout society. The other cases on the freeway, the freeway cases and the UCLA cases are going on trial toward the end of September. And there's, you know, more people can look up that at refusefascism.org. There's actually a petition people can sign to demand that charges be dropped. That can be signed at refusefascism.org. And funds are needed because there's a major political battle we have to wage around these cases. So there's more I can say about the cases themselves, but I wanted to say that just to give people the backdrop of what we're talking about. And it's incredibly urgent.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've only been there a few times to watch what was going on, including last week Monday. Mm-hmm. On Monday, when they were actually trying to have this argument about whether or not they should proceed with a new trial, and it was very heavy because a lot of what was being done is you could see this, and you could see it in what was happening to you folks. You could see it in terms of the way things were actually centered, the way they were actually unfolding, was in reality exactly what you're saying. It's a political trial. It's going after people. And it's not just going after the two people. It's very important. It's going after the two people, but it's going after the broader numbers of people. I mean, even the insanity that was talked about you can't be out on the sidewalk, you can't have this. You know, it was insane by any, you know, normal person's look at it, but the system had a real intent with that, to actually crush any idea that this was something that was worthwhile, that was legitimate, they were standing up against something that was absolutely wrong, and it was part of what the system does to people day. I mean, you could stay out front of that courthouse and see so many people walking in who, you know, are being screwed. They're, you know, every which way. You know, and here's something that represents standing up against this in the biggest sense, you know, in terms of actually going against all the ways that they come down on people here and around the world. And you were going to say, go ahead.
Yeah, well, what's concentrated in this case is whether or not people can and need to step outside of the bounds of ineffectual and meaningless protest as usual. Look, the normal channels is not going to stop this fascist regime. And two things happen under fascism. One, the rule of law itself is gutted. The basic, what have sort of been considered the basic rights that people ought to have get gutted. The separation of powers gets gutted. The separation between church and state gets gutted. So that's all on the one hand. But the other thing that happens is that crimes against humanity get legalized, get normalized. We were talking about this on the way over here. Look, the Holocaust, everything that happened through the Holocaust in Nazi Germany did not break out of the bounds of what was legal in German society at the time. That was legal, okay? Slavery was legal. The question is, when such crimes against humanity, such atrocities are being legalized, I mean, we're using this phrase, concentration camps at the border. It's when you actually think about, these are people that are being tortured by the Customs and Border Patrol. Right under the legal and backed up, thank you very much, by Twitter 2 days ago, Donald Trump backed up what is happening with the CPB and what is happening with these torture chambers. So this is all legalized. When that's going on, the ground and the space for political protest that is effectual has to change. Actually, you know, the analogy we've been using is that it's not illegal to shout fire in a crowded theater if there's a fire. And right now there's a fire of such extreme proportions, such extreme danger concentrated in this regime. It's incumbent on us to step outside the bounds and the confines of protest as usual, which is what these heroes did on the freeway in November and September, in September and November 2017. And the fact that they're being criminalized has to be opposed.
You know, it's very heavy what you're saying, because as I was watching the hearing, you know, and one of the things that came down and reading about it otherwise, and one of the things that really kept continually coming down is the system saying, the prosecution saying, the judge, you know, the whatever, you know, the prosecutor mainly, saying this thing out of, look, this is no place for your political shenanigans, you know. It's like, of course, what is shenanigans here? But no, you know, it's no place for you to stand up and talk about politics, and actually kept continually trying to, and I thought one of the things that was really inspiring was that these folks refused to, when the judge said, no, you can't talk about, not the judge, the prosecutor said, no, you can't talk about this. Each one of you said, really? I'm going to talk about it. So you did. You know, and there's an importance to that, because you look at what's happening. You look at what happened yesterday. What is growing in this country is, like, actually there is a real fascism that is not just in people's minds. It's actually taking place right now. You look at those Nazi, you know, whatever, idiots that were out there, and idiots is too nice for them, but when they were out there at the White House and were escorted off after people were arrested and taken off. So this kind of stuff is, like, really, you know, they weren't escorted off into jail. They were just actually escorted off of the scene, you know. And so the idea of actually you guys standing and all of you, I mean, it's very important that people understand that when this system is out after people, there's ways that it portrays itself. And one thing is that I found it very interesting is that the attorney, the DA was actually continuously referring to the rule of law to a certain extent. But that was actually, you had to step outside of it, because he would constantly keep telling people, he would say, look, why did you do this? No, you can't talk about that. And then, why did you do this? No, you can't talk about that. But actually, that was the only way you could deal with it. And it's important that that happened. What were you guys thinking about in that, in relation to that?
Well, yeah, there were, you know, the prosecution was, you know, trying to suppress why these charges, right? Why? No, he was trying to make it an open and shut case. You know, he said it. This is as simple as a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You know, he just kept referring to that. You know, but it's not as simple as that, right? Like, why? Like, you know, the banner that we had in the second action, you know, it says the Trump Pence regime must go. You know, that's the reason why we got on that freeway, right? To sound the alarm and to get people out of the normalization of it. You know, because people are you know, at that time, people were saying, you know, the blue wave is coming, you know, but 2018, you know, November 2018, you know, we're going to vote all these people into the Senate, into Congress, and that's the way we're going to put a stop to Trump. But look, that passed. You know, that was more than six months ago, right? And look at the situation right now at the border. You know, there's all these fascists in the streets yesterday, right? They were being escorted to a bar, you know, right after they assaulted people who were burning the American flag in front of that White House. You know, they were escorted to a bar, you know, and they were giving fist pumps to the police and to these fascists, right? This is who they are. You know, this is what they represent. And on the other side is us, you know, the people who hate what's going on, you know, and there's millions of people out there that actually are agonizing about the situation. You know, that right now, a lot of the people who believe in the Constitution and democracy, they're right in front of their eyes. They're looking at, you know, in D.C., there's Trump with tanks. You know, he's gutting the rule of law. He's, you know, doing all these things, right? And then there's people like that are putting something on the line and, you know, risking it all. And, you know, these people should be supported. You know, what happened in that courtroom, right? And it's clear what they're trying to do, right? Suppress dissent. And you know, they call themselves liberals, right? The state of California, right? The liberal state. And look what they're doing. They're trying to send people to jail. Like, right away, when there was a mistrial, he said, oh, well we're going to retry this case. You know, right away. You know, and because he's hell-bent on locking us up. You know,
mm-hmm. And there was real stakes involved in this, which I wanted to ask
you
about.
There's a number of very dangerous precedents that the city is trying to set here in this case, and it shows you how the Democratic Party, as a ruling class party, is working overtime to keep the struggle against fascism within ineffectual and meaningless confines. And there's a number of things that expose the fact that this is a highly political persecution, not just about a traffic incident. One, the anti-terrorist division is the one that pulled together these charges, the anti-terrorist division of the LAPD, which has got its roots in a section of the LAPD, which is notorious for political persecution and surveillance. Number two, they sent a spy into Refuse Fascism meetings to illegally record Alex and to surveil meetings about political discussion and planning in a church. If this is about a traffic incident, why did they send a spy? And why did they work overtime to prevent discussion of either of those facts that I just mentioned in the courtroom itself? And then three, they through the process of this last trial, they were working to criminalize mounting a political defense in such cases. And there's a motion that the prosecution filed, which we can send people. It's really a deep exposure of how nervous they were about the fact that the actual facts of why what this case was about were getting out in the courtroom and in the courthouse as part of our legal rights to actually talk about the political content of things. So they tried to ban all discussion of politics in the courtroom. They tried to ban all discussion of politics outside the courtroom. I mean, literally, this prosecutor was apoplectic about the fact that we were telling the public about what was concentrated in this case outside the courthouse. Also, the people that came into the courtroom as court support wore T-shirts that said things like, would you have convicted Rosa Parks? Would you have convicted the people who hid Anne Frank? Family separation, which side are you on? And this was a form of being able to wrench out freedom and expose the actual politics of this case to the broader society. And both the sheriffs and the prosecutor have tried to ban that. Right. Even just on Monday, they tried to prevent us going in the courtroom in these shirts, which is just a basic violation of the First Amendment, which despite what the system wants to do, that does not stop at the courthouse door. So, look, there's very ominous precedent being set in this case. And if you think that just we're in a sanctuary city, so we're safe, then you don't know what we're facing. And I do really want to encourage people. Look, there's a need for you to have these people's backs. This is a fascist regime that's rapidly consolidating power, okay? And we are the only ones that are going to stop this. If you thought 2018 was going to save us, then you have to confront reality. There is nothing that the Democrats have done to put a stop to this fascist regime. And on the contrary, they have funded what this fascist regime are doing, and backed it up through whiny, meaningless side complaints while actually unifying with the fundamental logic and assumptions of what's happening. And if you think I'm wrong, then think deeply about the fact that Nancy Pelosi just literally funded the entire operation at the border with no limits. So this is on us, people, and we both need to learn from what happened on the freeway. We need to do this ourselves in terms of political protest that steps outside the confines of meaningless protest and business as usual. Look, it's happened in other countries. You know, Alex was talking about this earlier. Look at what's happening in Hong Kong right now. Look what happened in Armenia, in South Korea. People drive out regimes through mass sustained nonviolent mobilization, and this is on us to do here. It is not enough to tweet your complaints. You have to act in the streets. So people should go to refusefascism.org. I really want to invite people. Go to refusefascism.org, fill out the online petition, donate to the defendants. And look, there's a great need for you to have their back. So, you know, that's what I would say.
And we're going to be actually really, really counting on Annie coming back and you guys coming back and other people coming back to continuously hit at this. And I think to really keep people's eyes open and their heads working. All right. So I want to thank you very much for joining us today. You guys, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything,
Michael,
you want to say in closing?
Well, we're not going to back down. Okay. And we're going to put up a fight, and we're calling on people to come do court support, get involved in the movement to drive out the Trumpens regime.
Right, that was the sound of the Revolution Club as they marched into Lafayette Park, right across the street from the White House in Washington, D.C. on July 4th. It was the day that Trump spoke, encircled by tanks with warplanes flying above. The American Führer, a demented bully, threatening the world. But the revolutionaries were demonstrating for a different future, imagining a world without America. Within a minute of the march you just heard, notorious flag burner Joey Johnson set fire to a U.S. flag within sight of the White House. I was able to interview Carl Dix the following day, July 5th, about what they did that day and what it meant. Here's that interview.
Nice. You can burn my house down, prison me for a while. Me out and close it, but oh, make me some. Still keep on flying. You can break my heart with hatred, drive my children's mouth, set your dogs to hunt me down. Love and justice still grow.
Voice of Revolution. Yeah, there you go. All right. And speaking of that, I'm very pleased to welcome to the show Carl Dix. Carl, how are you?
Good, Michael.
Yeah. How are you, man? You're good? So
yeah, I'm coming to you from the D.C. Superior Court building right now, where Joey Johnson and the other member of the National Revolution Tour are having an arraignment right now for a courageous and righteous action that they took, which was illegitimately attacked by the police. That courageous action was burning not one, but two American flags right in front of the White House. And in burning those flags, Joey Johnson declared that this was for the children in the concentration camps on the border, for the children being bombed in Yemen and other places, where the women whose right to choose to have an abortion is being taken away from them, where the black and brown people who are being police terrorized and mass incarcerated, for the people of the world, we are imagining a world without America and fighting for a world without America. And then he torched the first flag in the face of some howling fans of Donald Trump who were trying to break through our perimeter and stop it. And then we reformed our perimeter and burned the second flag. So, and right now we're fighting to get Joey and the other member of the tour out of jail to get the charges dropped on them, because after we burn the flags, the police of various kinds, because there are a lot of police forces in D.C., who had stood around and did nothing as we were marching away from the White House and away from the scene, ran up and tackled Joey Johnson and tackled the other member of the National Revolution Tour, brutalized them and arrested them. And now those people, those brothers who took that courageous, determined stand, are facing charges here in D.C., and we're fighting to get them released and the charges dropped.
Mm-hmm. Let me remind listeners that you're tuned into the Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Carl Dix about the action in front of the White House yesterday, where Joey Johnson set afire the bloody rag called the American flag. That's right. And Carl was out there with Joey, and we're talking about what Joey did and what happened. And Carl, one of the things I wanted to actually ask you too is that, you know, it seems to me that this you know, there was a lot of heart in what happened yesterday. I think the way that people marched in, the way that people attracted attention, and I think it did something. But there was also a polarization there to a certain extent, because it was very heavy. You could really get a sense of what Trump was pulling together when you looked at some of those fascistic people that were actually running around. I think there was one big guy in a shirt and some other stuff that were really, you know, and wearing their, you know, MAGA hats and all this stuff. It was an intense standoff, but it was something that was incredibly important and something that I've seen reverberate all across, you know, across the internet gigantically. But it was very important that this happened in the face of all that.
Yeah, we think that that's true, Michael, because look, Trump announced that he was going to do this militaristic and fascistic orgy out there on the National Mall, and the response from the Democrats was, oh, it's going to cost too much money. Oh, you're making it all about yourself and not about the country. So they wrapped themselves in the same red, white, and blue and made some petty, you know, arguments about it. We, the revolution, on the other hand, saw this for the provocation that it was and for the step in consolidating fascist rule in this country that it was. And we saw that there needed to be a determined response. And a crew of us, not a large crew, but a determined crew, marched in a disciplined, organized way and calmly set about creating the space where Joey could burn the flag and defending that space against these howling Trump fans, including Proud Boys and whatever, whoever else they were, who were determined to break through and to stop that. And then after we burned the first one, we reformed and calmly, in a disciplined way, set about burning another. And the point is, you've got the fascists rolling forward and you've got the Democrats who have no answer to them, no answer to that. But what we do have and what was made manifest there is that there is a force which has an answer to that, and that answer being an actual revolution, one that overthrows this system, gets rid of it, and builds in its place a completely different and far better system and world, and that there's the leadership for that in Bob Avakian, and there's a vision of the future society. It could be built in the Constitution for a future socialist republic in North America. And we were putting that out there for people and onto the map. And even the call that Joey made when he said, imagine a world without America. Fight for a world without America. We were putting that out before people, connected to the fact that there's a force that's actually acting to do that, as part of the National Get Organized for a Revolution, an actual revolution tour, we're mobilizing and organizing thousands into the movement for an actual revolution and working to unleash them to act in a revolutionary and disciplined and organized way to impact millions. And that's what yesterday was an indication of and a glimpse of. And I might add that at the same day that we did that down on the border with Mexico, other members of the National Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour burned, I think, a couple of flags. I know they burned one. They may have burned two as well down on the border with Mexico, right down there where the immigrants are being put in concentration camps, where children are being ripped from their parents' arms and caged up themselves.
Yeah, yeah, it was very important. The whole thing, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you, too, though, is that there's a, you know, there's something about, you know, I watched on the internet, I watched people, you know, people's response to this. And really, there was a heartening, feeling there, where a lot of people for the first time were actually able to see something that could stand up against the horrors and that are represented and concentrated in the flag and in the horrors that the system, as you were saying, does, you know, perpetrate against people all over the world and has been doing. I mean, they're talking, this is a system that actually basically has the ability to end the planet. And I think that the seriousness with which that flag being burnt and Joey and the other people that were there who were, you know, both standing around Joey to protect him, but also the other person that got arrested, you know, this whole situation is one that really calls out to people, I think, in a way that it demands a response from people. It demands more than just saying, good, I'm glad you did it. It actually demands a little bit more from people. Let's talk about that and what people can do in relation to that.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, because I think just in terms of what it clearly shows, I think in the earlier segment, Alex talked about how the Proud Boys got escorted around D.C. by the police, and after they had tried to attack Joey and stop him from burning the flag, members of the Proud Boys were fist bumping and high-fiving with the police. That shows you how this stuff is lining up. And it really is, like, right now Joey is facing charges of malicious burning and felony assault on a police officer, and the other person is facing resisting arrest and assault on a police officer for having taken a righteous stand in the interest of the people of the world, and one that is protected constitutionally. So allowing this to go down would be a very serious attack on the right to dissent, and it can't be allowed to go down. So people need to go to the website revcom.us to get the information on this. We're going to be producing materials that need to be spread among people broadly, as well as among people in the legal field, because lawyers have to take this up. Anybody who is seriously concerned about the right to free speech needs to take this up, and everybody needs to donate to support this, because they are going after a very important constitutionally protected right, and we can't look at this like it's just a local charge or whatever, and we'll find out more about who's exactly pressing the charges, because we've been told that it was the Secret Service that arrested Joey and the other person, even though we're now in a local D.C. court. So we have to find out more about what are the exact dimensions of this case. But people have to step into it. And they have to, as they step into it, look at the whole picture and what it means to have a country that is actually an empire that perpetrates these horrors on people around the world, and that people are supposed to embrace the flag that flies over and symbolizes all these horrors. Because a lot of people in my generation were able to reject that. Now, we had some people who helped us do that. You know, Muhammad Ali helped when he refused to go in the army because he wasn't down with Vietnam. John Carlos and Tommy Smith helped with the Black Power salute at the Olympics in 1968. But there is a real dividing line here, a couple dividing lines. And one of them is, are you going to embrace that bloodstained rag? Are you going to embrace it like that guy, I think he calls himself a Proud Boy, who was trying to scoop up the ashes and shards of the first flag that Joey burned? Or are you going to stand against it? And another dividing line is, okay, we can, even if you're not yet ready to reject the red, white, and blue and America and everything it stands for, are you going to stand aside and allow the right to criticize America and what it does around the world be suppressed by these authorities? Because that's what they're aiming to do. And people need to go to revcom.us and get the information on how to get involved with Joey's defense and how to contribute to it. And they also need to check out the live stream that I believe it was Annie who mentioned that's going to be happening on Sunday. Tune into RevCom is doing a live stream. And people need to check that out. Because you need to get involved in this movement for an actual revolution. You need to get involved in the defense of Joey Johnson and the other member of the National Revolution Tour. And you need to get involved in the defense effort for the Freeway 9, because I was there last week in the courtroom and out in the streets with people defending the people who had taken that righteous stand. Mm-hmm. Because, look, there is much worse than the equivalent of a fire happening in a crowded theater. This is a fascist regime consolidating power in the mightiest empire in the world, one with the capability to destroy the planet with a demented bully with his finger on the nuclear button. And that's got to be stopped. And as we act to stop it, people need to grapple with, where did that come from? And where it came from is from this capitalist imperialist system and how it worked.
Okay, Carl, we're going to have to wrap this up real quick now. All right?
Okay.
All right, so how can people get in touch with you again real quick?
Just to pull it together, go to the website revcom.us, get information on Joey's defense effort and how to connect with it, how to contribute to it, and check out the live stream at Tune Into RevCom, because we're going to get into the National Revolution Tour, what it's all about, why we embarked on it, and why we decided it was important to come to D.C. on July 4th and burn the flag in front of the White House.
It's okay.
And everything else about it.
Carl, thank you very much, and we'll be back in touch with you real soon, man.
All right, Michael.
All right, take care now. All right, we're going to take a quick break and be right back, so stay tuned. Welcome back. There you go. I just love that song. I can't get enough of it. But I'm going to jump right into what we're doing now, okay? Just a couple weeks ago, I saw a play that, you know, it was about Anne Frank, and it was about so much more than Anne Frank in the way that it actually is traditionally done. And I, you know, you grow up in this country with even a modicum, just a tiny bit of sense about what's happened in the world and the horrors that have been unleashed for forever, basically, around this. And this country now, you think about what's happening on the borders and what they're doing everywhere else to people, what they're threatening with Iran, all this, you know, all of this. And to me, I looked at it and I thought, okay, well, this will be interesting. But, you know, then initially I said, oh, well, but I've seen so much about Anne Frank. And then I read, it's Anne Frank, but it's not the way you read it. So I wanted to thank each of you people for coming in today. And we're being joined by the director, is it Eve Brandstein or Brandstein?
Brandstein.
Okay, there you go. See? and I'm going to try this. Abba Lalazarzadeh?
Lalazarzadeh. Yeah, perfect.
Okay. I'm just going to call you Abba. Okay, and you're in the play. You star as you are Annie and Rob Brownstein.
Stein.
Okay. Okay. I'm just going to call you from now on.
Okay.
There you go. And basically, we're going to jump into this and really hit at this because it was one of the most powerful plays I've seen in a little while. Wow. And I've seen the Anne Frank story many times in different ways. But this was actually something that sort of leapt off the stage and just sort of, you know, put you there. I mean, because you're sitting there and you're thinking, wait a minute, I know this whole play. But then you're looking at Abba, your character, and you're saying, wait a minute, this is a smart aleck, bossy, you know, look, going around trying to figure out, acting like living just in the world.
Right.
And then it's actually very interesting too, Rob, for your character, how you sit there and you're the stabilizing force. But in the middle of it all, you also have a deep understanding of what seems to be approaching. Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks volumes to what's happening today. So I'm going to open up, though, first with I want to talk to Eve and ask you, Eve, for people who might not know about Anne Frank, just a tiny description, a brief description of who she is and why you felt it was important to have this play now.
Well, Anne Frank was a 13-year-old diarist who kept extensively brilliant journals with deep insights about what it was like for her during a time of 2 years while she was in an annex, hiding from the impending doom that eventually did claim all the Frank family and all those that lived in the annex with her. But it reflects what any teenage girl, in a way, had to endure, living sort of in these quarters, but also the dreams, passions, desires of her life. The way we created this play, this production based on this script, was to try to create a sense that it belonged to us as an audience as much as it did to the audience viewing it. They were part of it. So had a immersive experience, number one, and also we reflect the possibility that what if Anne Frank had survived? And that's how we opened the play, with asking the audience to be part of this experience, because the actors join the audience and then go up on stage. So it has a Pirandellian effect, and then it starts telling us a story about Anne Frank, if she had been able to live to be 20, what it would have been like for her. And then we go into the backstory of this known story, but from this new perspective that a novice can reflect on that, about what it was like to play a more original, fresh version of Anne.
Yeah, that's just where I was going to go. So, Abba, let's talk about that, because it's that and about your portrayal of Anne, where you know where it ends in your own mind, mm-hmm. but still you're celebrating their ability to live. And the way that it's portrayed is like, what if?
Right.
But then you're doing that against the background of, I know what if meant when it happened, mm-hmm. you know. So let's talk about that a little.
Yeah, well, I think what's so interesting about this version of the play is that we know exactly how it ends, but we have this scenario in which she survives, right? And so these two different worlds diverging together makes it all the more powerful when we discover in the end that she doesn't survive, even though we know it from the very beginning. One of my main goals for doing it was that I think she's become such a pinnacle figure and has become almost idolized and non-human that I really wanted to center her back down and show that, you know what, she's just a girl. She's just a girl growing into her womanhood, and these are the circumstances that she's been given, and she's going to try to make, she's going to live. She's going to live and make it work despite the current circumstances.
And what's heavy there is that everybody knows that she isn't going to live. And the fact that so much is like just concentrated in all that, mm-hmm. you know, because you're sitting there watching it and you're wishing, you're thinking, oh, if it had turned out differently, but it didn't, mm-hmm. you know, and she was one of countless numbers of other people who her story was told, but all these other people whose stories weren't told, which is to me, it was really gripping. And you know, Rob, I wanted to ask you too, because you're a character. Your character has to actually hold everything together to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
And with the just mind-boggling, you know, the mind-boggling task you have of keeping everybody to have a little bit of hope that they might get out, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's something that must have been really kind of very difficult, and he did a very good job at it.
Thank you.
Sure. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, I mean, I think Ovid touched on it. I think, you know, remembering that they're people mm-hmm. is the first thing. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not just symbols or ideas or a book we read back in middle school or high school. And then, you know, for me, that part really wasn't that difficult because I'm a parent, you know, and all I had to do was say, well, what if this were happening now, which sadly enough doesn't seem quite so far-fetched, and how would I do it, you know? And I would do my best for everybody, and you have to have hope. Otherwise, what are you doing? Why are you staying? Why are you hiding in an annex in the hope that you're going to outlive the war, you know? And I think these people all thought that they were going to make it. And, you know, sort of the irony is that it was really at the end. They almost made it. They get caught right at the end. And then I think when you're talking about stories, I think one of the things that comes through in this play, which it just kills me every night, is that the only reason that we have Anne's diary is that there was some Nazi officer who was mean to a little girl and wouldn't let her take her diary with her when they took her and made her leave it. And so there it was, and now it became this huge thing, you know? Anyway.
Well, one of the things that the thing of with the book, because it really did get me, it's like sort of that was sort of a spit in the face of all the people that tried to get her done. When you had that character, the agent, the literary
the publisher,
agent, publisher. When she was pitching the book to him, it was like you're sitting there saying, "Wow, this is you know, wow, the guy, you know." And even though you know it, you know, intellectually, you know what happened, but it was
a great story. Yeah. Make a movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. But it's also the thing that got to me too. And I think, you know, you're talking about this, and we're looking at all the things that happened, but you're also looking at Anne Frank that we don't normally get to see a lot of, which is, you know, a young girl who is, you know, basically loving and who is loved by many people, but who also can be a pain in the butt, mm-hmm. you know, it's not humanizing, but it's actually concentrating a lot of contradictions in there, but it's actually up against all this stuff that she's facing, which none of the people in that house, no one in the world, you think about how many people were slaughtered in that sense. And to me, it was just sort of what was captured in this play was the essence of that. You know, it was sort of, you guys were able to bring things to people to help them see the humanity.
Good. You know, well, I'm glad you saw that, man, because that's what we worked on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
know. Now,
I have an idea. I have a thought. I just wanted
to
speak about it. I just had a thought that somewhere in one of those immigration centers right now, there's a 13-year-old girl with this soul.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
She's in a cage or she's behind a fence and she's dreaming about what it'd be like if she could, you know, express her soul or be where she wanted to be. So the dreams of 13 and 14-year-old teenage girls are sort of the same throughout time in a way. And also, in Anne's case, she had fabulous ideas about what life was and what she wanted. And she was a human being. And I think what Rob said about these are real people, I think that's one of the things that the play allows us to see. And we tried to go with as much of a diverse cast so that you could get a feeling that this could be anybody's story, not just this particular period. With great respect, we do have those people that we have to be in memory of from that story, but we wanted it to stand as an example of these are stories that other people would identify with.
Well, it's all through history. I mean, straight from the Holocaust till now, I have a colleague who I've been helping him with a screenplay he wrote about the Japanese internment camps. George Takei is coming out with a memoir of his childhood. You know, it's all these connections. And you're right. I mean, every one of them could write this diary, anyone.
Mm-hmm. All right. Unfortunately, we're going to have to rush because...
Okay.
Eve, you said that this isn't a simple history lesson, but it's a resonant clarion call, and I thought that would be something that you could speak to in a minute as we go out. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes, please come and see this, and remember, we're here for each other. And Anne always said, you know, it's never too late to be there for others, to care, and to imagine the possibilities. So I would like to say that this will also inspire people to do something and take action, as well as feel what the past has given us, which is some sorrow and some hope. We have to have hope.
And, you know, never forget those people, too, that are, like, as you said, as you were saying earlier, you know, the people who are in the cages now. Mm. And I was thinking about that. I was thinking about the one example of the young child, the baby, and the father on the bank of the river.
Yeah.
And what that concentrated. And folks, this cannot be allowed to continue to go on. So with that said, I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Sure. And I'm going to be sending dozens of people to come and see this, so keep it up, all right?
Please.
All right. Okay. All right. Take care now. And that brings us to the end of yet another show. During today's show, both Annie Day and Carl Dix mentioned a Facebook Live event. A video of that event is now available, and I recommend it to everyone. It's on Facebook at Tune Into RevCom, the page of Revolution, RevCom.us, and it's called Why We Burn the Flag. What this revolution is all about and how you can be part of it. Imagine a world without America. You can also find a link to that video on my Facebook page. Now, I want to thank all of my guests today, and I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and my engineer, Teddy Robinson. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Talk to you again next week. We're going out now with Green Day and 99 Revolutions. Working